In this episode of My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State.
They're release the child to me and my husband. And the doc says, oh, by the way, I followed through on that test. And he says, the rabbit died.
Judy Herrick gets some of the wildest news you can get just after adopting a baby. Jack smuggles a baby back to Michigan across state lines.
You're going to fly back to Michigan with this child. And when you get back, no parties, nothing. It all has to be undergo because you are breaking the law.
And Riley Kaplan's dad won't give her candy at the grocery store, so she immediately goes for the nuclear option.
I'm screaming, yelling, stranger danger, help. I need help. I don't know this guy.
Oh, my God.
And then
what is your dad doing?
Furious.
My parents. Up next on My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, I'm Rob Prince. There are few honors in this life more incredible and significant than the honor of being a parent. I can remember when my daughter was born in Grand Rapids that I was grateful babies don't come out calling you daddy right away. They give you a few months to adjust to the idea. It's been 22 years now, and I'm still adjusting to the idea. I'm not quite sure I'm mature enough to be a parent. In today's episode, we have stories of parents going to incredible lengths to get the honor of having children, and one parent who may have thought it would have been a better idea to just adopt a dog. Our first story comes from Judy Herrick, who, back in the mid-1960s, was far more successful at becoming a mother than she ever expected to be. She shared this story at our February 20, 2026 open mic storytelling event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids.
So I got married at age 20, and of course I really wanted to have children. So my husband and I were dedicated to having children. And after 3.5 years, nothing happened. So we went to see a specialist and discovered that her chances were very slim. They weren't impossible, but they were very slim. So we proceeded and decided that we would adopt. So we had a conversation with the folks in Saginaw. We lived in Freeland, which is east side of the state, north, like in the vicinity of Midland, Bay City, and Saginaw. And so we lived on a road, which the north side of that road was owned by Consumers Power. And so it was a beautiful area. And we had like a 3-acre property and ideal for kids to be running around. So after much discussion, we decided to adopt. So we went to the agency in Saginaw and they said, well, you know, it's kind of difficult because there aren't a whole lot of children available, so forth and so on. So we said, we're going to begin the process. So we get on the road, and it is January following year, and we get a call. And now keep in mind, we lived, again, like I said, in a large three acres of property in a dirt road at the very end of a road, and the embankment at the end of that road went up to the expressway. That'll have meaning in a minute. So we get a call in January and said, we have this child for you, and it's a boy. And we're so excited about this. So we had talked to the agency and they said, okay, you can have this child. And we actually came in and met the child. I held the child. I knew immediately this was going to be my child. And
how old was the child?
He was just 6 months old.
Wow.
Just 6 months old. So, and we thought that was great. So we prepared and I went out and they said, you can have this child. And it was going to be the end of January to have this child. Come get the child. So we're all prepared. And I went out and I got the formula I was supposed to get. And I had bought all kinds of baby food. And I made the formula because I was certain we were going to get that child. That night, in fact, it was the day before, it was a huge snowstorm. The largest snowstorm that they'd had in many, many years. And blocked us in and blocked all the neighbors in. So we had a call and our friend said, that's okay, because we have a toboggan and what we're going to do is we'll clean you out and get you down so you can get the child. And then we have this toboggan and we'll stand on the expressway and then we'll pull the toboggan down with you and the baby. So I thought, well, that's a heck of a deal. So I called the agency and the agency, well, I'm sorry, we cannot let you have this child until the road commission guarantees that you have a direct line into where you are. I was devastated. Had all the formula in there, all the baby clothes was ready, the room was ready, and we couldn't get him. Couldn't get him for 2 weeks. And finally, even though the neighbors were ready to drag him down from the expressway, and finally we got this child and brought him home, and he's just adorable, 6-month-old. And the people who had watched him during that first 6 months had not done anything to help him sit up or roll over or anything because they wanted my husband and I to have that first experience. So we are just absolutely ecstatic with this child. And he gets sick, and he ends up in the hospital. And he ends up in intensive care and in lockdown. So the only people who could go in was mom and dad. So we find out that he has a bacterial disease, but that it was curable. And so we kept him there. It was like 7 days. And he kept getting better and better. You know, I'm thinking to myself, well, shoot, I can't even create a child with, you know, a starter kit and full set of instructions. And so the doctor said, no, everything is fine. And so it's time for us to release this child. So as we're in there, I'm talking to my doc, and I said, you know, I've noticed something isn't quite right with me. I'm not feeling as strong as I was. And he said, well, we need to get a pregnancy test. And I went, that's stupid. I've just spent 3 years trying to figure out how to get a child. And I remember now Mitch is like 6 months in a week or something like that, maybe 7 months. And they release the child to me and my husband. And the doc says, oh, by the way, I followed through on that test. And he says, the rabbit died. And I went, you don't use rabbits. He said, well, basically, you're expecting.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, let's see, I just went through 3.5 years. I just got a 6-month-old child. And he said, well, based upon what you've been talking about, that child will be here in September.
Which is how far? How far?
This is 4 months.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so, sure enough, in September, the child was there. So they are, thank God he was 6 months old, because they are 13 months apart, and that saved me. So that's my Michigan weather child story.
Wow. And how is your son doing now?
He's your height.
Wow. Okay.
And he's 59, going to be 60, 59 years old, and doing fine. And we love him to pieces. And it's funny because he doesn't want to know anything about his family. I guess he figures that this is family is either good enough or bad enough, and doesn't want to go and find someone else. So he's just a delight.
Did he ever get his toboggan ride?
Maybe. Certainly not that
way. It's not too late, dude.
But I had to throw out all the formula because by the time we had him,
All right. Yeah. Judy, everyone, thank you so much for that.
Judy Herrick. She shared that story at our February 20th, 2026 open mic storytelling event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids. This is My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State. I'm Rob Prince. The intense desire to have children can lead some parents to take very drastic measures to fulfill that dream, from extremely costly fertility treatments to complex and heart-wrenching international adoptions. There can be a tremendous amount of red tape. But what do you do when the red tape is so thick that you can't possibly cut through it all? Well, as our next storyteller found out, you can try flying over it. Jack shared this story of an adoption red tape hell he went through in Grand Rapids back in 1991. He told this story at our February 20, 2026 open mic storytelling event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids. Here's Jack.
My wife and I were going through a lot of infertility treatments and such, and after we got married, and we decided to try the adoption route. And unfortunately, you know, one of the things is in this West Michigan community, you have to kind of belong to a religious institution to adopt through Catholic Social Services. And my wife was a bit older, and just, you know, everybody wants the 20-year-old to be the mom, not the 36-year-old, even though they got a lot of experience. We started doing some exploring of what other options we had, and we got to an attorney down in Toledo, you know, started working with her, and we were, I still can't understand how this ever happens, quite serendipitous. A couple found out about us and wanted us to adopt the child they were going to have. Being the early 90s, the advent of open adoption started, that things aren't signed, sealed, and never seen again. And so it was going to be an open adoption. So we started communicating with them, but they lived in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Wow.
And we lived in the state of Michigan. Unbeknownst to us, how this would work is, at that time, the adoption laws are very strict. Michigan, no, you can only do it through an agency. Nevada, no, only through an attorney. How is this going to work? You know, then we get the call and say, okay, you got to fly to Vegas. The baby is born. This is end of July. And you're just going, oh, this is real. Buying tickets. Is this going to work? Don't know. We're going to Vegas. We're gambling. Okay, this is the biggest gamble I've ever done.
Yeah.
Forget playing slot. I don't gamble. I figured this was a big enough gamble, and my luck worked out. So we hopped in a plane, one-way ticket, flew out to Vegas, got there, and went to the hospital, met the birth parents and our little guy. And it's like, okay, what's next? How are we going to do this adoption? Well, we have a little problem here. So what they came up with is our attorney in Ohio knew of other state adoption laws, because attorneys do more multi-state adoptions than agencies do. And the state of Kansas has very liberal adoption laws.
How is Kansas getting involved in this?
It has nothing to do with Wizard of Oz and Dorothy, All right. I really don't know. Kansas. And she knew an attorney in Wichita, Kansas. You five are going to fly from Vegas to Wichita, Kansas, because we have to do the release. Birth parents have to release the child in a court of law and sign the document. And then we have to... they have to show residency and all this stuff. And again, liberal laws, you can show residency, I think it was within just a few days in Kansas or something, like a week.
So you had to move to Kansas?
No, this is, I didn't move. I still lived here.
All right.
I lived in Grand Rapids. And they lived in Vegas. So I flew everybody to Wichita, Kansas. But we flew through Phoenix. And we were waiting for our flight. We were off to a side and couldn't really hear it. Also, I stepped out, and it was the last boarding call from the flight from Phoenix to Wichita. And I yelled back. I says, we have to get going. Grab him out of the – he was sitting by the bar so we can go. I rushed in, and the woman, the stewardess, was closing the door, and I stuck my foot. Do that today, I'd be
you'd be walking the rest of your life.
I'd be walking. Then she goes, sir, I have to close this door. I go, no, you are not closing this door. I need assurance that we are getting on that plane. Well, I can't tell you that. I go, then I'm not doing this. She goes, okay. She said she promised she would go shut the door. I will go check, and I will come back. We got on, thank God.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was like, yeah, I was to a point, I will do anything to get what had to be done. We got to Wichita. The attorney had some place where they set up. We were living in another place, but we did have our little guy with us. And we were in this, you know, nice little suite, and we were waiting for our directions from the attorney. And it was like, okay, we asked for the crib. When our son was born, he was only about 18 inches long and 6 pounds. We put him in the crib and went, this ain't gonna work, because these cribs are huge. We had brought in some bedding, and we put it, and he slept in the bottom drawer of the dresser. But it was not, he keeps thinking, he gave us a hard time.
Closing
it. But no,
there.
We're not closing it. It was sitting on the floor. We were not going to slide him in when he cried. So, but that's where he spent the first weeks of his life, because we went through the proceedings. Court proceedings weren't good. The birth parents flew back. Okay, now we're in Wichita, Kansas. We got to get back to Grand Rapids. When you do an adoption off across state lines, you cannot transport an infant across state lines unless it's yours. Well, the adoption is not final. And it's called an interstate compact. Our attorney in Kansas, attorney in Ohio, and the adoption agency back in Michigan are trying to get this work. And it wasn't working. The state of Michigan, because we had first filed to do the adoption in Nevada and then to Michigan, and then they saw it was Kansas to Michigan. They went, well, that gave them a red flag. And again, you're violating the interstate compact. So here we are, stuck in Wichita, Kansas, trying to figure out what to do with a week-old baby and trying to get back to Michigan. So we just killed time in August in Wichita. They do have a good zoo, by the way. We saw that. And we just kept waiting and waiting. And finally, the attorneys, our agency here, the guy who's the director of agency here, they just said, screw it. What you guys are going to do, this is what we're going to do. You're going to fly back to Michigan with this child. And when you get back, no parties, nothing. It all has to be undergo because you are breaking the law.
You're smuggling a baby back.
We
to
are smuggling a baby across state lines. I don't know if it's a misdemeanor, felony. So okay, I already put a foot in the door. Now I'm going across state lines with a infant.
You got multiple federal charges right now.
Right,
a grand jury is gonna.
Right. Well, he's 35. Go after him. We're back here, and it's like, no baby shower, nothing. And we just have to.
Because, like, wait, what's going to happen at the baby shower? Like, the feds are going to come crashing through the windows and grab the baby?
People start talking and da-da-da-da-da. Uh-huh. And we just went, okay, so we just kept talking with attorneys and such. When is this adoption going to get finalized? So we were back, I'm going to say like August 17th or something like that. We were 20th or something like that. When is it going to get finalized? And then all of a sudden, December 17th, got a call. We have the paperwork. It's all final. Gabe is now your child. Adoption is complete.
Just in time for Christmas. That would have been one weird secret of Christmas.
And we just cried. Andrea and I just cried. It was a long dream, going through all the infertility treatments for about 3 years. And then we called it our I Love Lucy sketch to adopt this child. And it just, the hoops and everything. And 3.5 years later, we adopted another child locally. And there was a little stress in it, but we said to ourselves, we will not go through that again to adopt a child. It was just so much stress, so much uncertainty. He's a great kid. It teaches you have to stand up and go for what you want. And that came more from my wife, Andrea, than me. And sometimes you do have to break the law to get what you want. And it's not that I was hurting anybody. It was really weird that the institutions of government were preventing what two couples want to happen. And he is still in contact with his birth parents.
Wow.
They live in Arkansas now. So.
Okay.
But yeah, and that is one thing about open adoption is that they can have contact if they like.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you so much. That's an incredible story.
That was Jack. He shared that story at our February 20, 2026 open mic storytelling event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids. This is My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, the My Parents episode. I'm Rob Prince. Children are a blessing, but I dare you to try telling that to a parent at a grocery store when their kid is having a full-out meltdown. I've certainly experienced the parent side of that situation, but it seems we so rarely get to hear the kid's side of the argument in those moments, usually because they won't stop screaming and throwing their limbs in the air. Well, Riley Kaplan can give us a little glimpse of what was going through her mind years ago when she was the kid in the grocery store having the meltdown. She shared this story with me in my classroom at Michigan State University on April 23rd, 2026. Here's Riley.
When I was, I want to say, 6 years old.
Where did this happen?
This happened in Birmingham, Michigan.
Okay.
I went with my dad to go pick up some groceries for the family, and I hate the grocery store. Despise the grocery store.
Why?
I hate it. I don't want to walk around. I don't want to look at the food. I want the food to come to me. I don't want to go and search for it.
What year are we talking here?
How old am I right now? I'm 18. I was 6, so that's 12 years ago.
So the 2010s.
Yeah.
The 2010s, you're at a grocery store with your dad with a bad attitude. Why did you go to the grocery store then?
Because he forced me in the car.
Oh.
I got picked up and put in the car. Was not happy about it. Already in a bad mood, right?
Okay.
Little me was also a diva. Like, if I'm in a bad mood, everyone's in a bad mood. I was already annoyed because I'd not get the American Girl doll I wanted, so I was already...
Wait, was it your birthday or something? Or
no,
Christmas?
I just wanted a new American Girl doll, and I didn't get it.
It wasn't even a holiday, and you were mad.
No, and I was just upset. And then I couldn't find clothes that matched the other American Girl doll I had, and I was just already going
You already had an American Girl doll.
Of course.
And you were mad that you didn't have another one.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get the American Girl doll's dog, because it had its own dog, and then... They said I couldn't get it. And then I was annoyed. And I had a look-like-me doll. And then I couldn't find an outfit to match me. So I was already just in a pissed-off mood going into the grocery store.
Okay.
And so we get in the grocery store. Obviously, I'm just going to sit inside the basket because I'm not walking.
Yeah.
You couldn't ask me to do that.
At 6 years old. Oh, you're in, okay, the basket. There's room.
Yeah. Well, in, like, the cart. Like
Yeah.
You couldn't. No. I was sitting in there.
Yep.
I was complaining the whole time. Obviously, my dad was getting mad at me. And I was like, you can't yell at me like I'm your little princess. What are you trying? What are you doing? And then so we're walking and then we're getting to check out after being there for like probably 2 hours of walk. I don't know. I'm exaggerating.
It certainly like felt like it. Yeah.
It felt like it. I thought I was there for like a whole day. So we get to the checkout. Then I look to my left and I see Whoppers, like the candy Whoppers. I love Whoppers.
Really?
I love them. I was like, Dad, can I get the Whoppers? He was like, no. It's like, why not? He's like, you've been mean this whole day. I was like, okay, I'll be nice. Like, I want my Whoppers. He said no, so I took them, threw them in the cart. He took them out of the cart. I grabbed them back, threw them in the cart. He said no, took them, threw them out. So we're finished checking out, and I'm still complaining, stomping. I was like, can I get the Whoppers? He said no. So I take it upon myself to yell, Stranger Danger!
Oh,
Stranger Danger!
You did. You turned it up to, like, you went nuclear on your dad.
Yeah, I wanted the Whoppers. And he said no. And I said, so I warned him something bad was going to happen if you didn't get them for me. So I'm screaming, yelling, Stranger Danger, help! I need help! I don't know this guy.
Oh, my God.
And then
is your dad doing?
Furious. Uh-huh. Furious. So he... I think he left the groceries. We already paid. This looks bad on his part, right? He picks me up, throws me over his shoulder, and starts running to the car.
Only confirming.
While I'm screaming, Stranger Danger. You're making yourself look worse.
There's pretty much, in his defense, there's pretty much no way to not look guilty when a kid is yelling that.
Well, obviously. And I'm yelling, Stranger Danger, Stranger Danger. And then he throws me in the cart, and I roll down the window. Help, I'm being kidnapped. Help, Stranger Danger. And he's like, I swear to God, if you say this one more time. I was like, get me my Whoppers, and I'll stop. So what does he do? Goes back inside, finds a big, giant, like, Easter container of Whoppers, and brings them back to the car.
Wow.
And I never yelled stranger danger from that point forward.
What did you say when you finally got them?
I said, thank you. And I sat down and ate my Whoppers.
You see how reasonable I could be, Dad?
Yeah, I just had one condition. And then we go home, and obviously I'm skipping inside. I got my thing of Whoppers. I got my American Girl doll. I'm now having a great day. My mom walks downstairs. My dad's like, I'm going to f***ing kill her. I swear to God, I'm never taking her to the grocery store again. She is your daughter. She's not my daughter anymore. You can take her. My mom's like, what happened? He's like, I don't want to talk to her. Like, she started yelling stranger danger. And my mom's like, well, you didn't get her the Whoppers. I mean, I agree with her.
Your mom took your side.
Mom, of course she did. And then she started dying laughing about this. And I'm pretty sure this story gets brought up on a weekly basis. Still to this day. Because they all said I was the most difficult kid to raise. Because my brother was the simplest, easiest, quiet person. And I wasn't. So they bring this up. And they still, like, show me videos of, like, my old temper tantrums of things
really?
Not getting what I wanted. And they're like, you were a terrible child.
Did you keep your word? Did you never pull the nuclear option again with Stranger Danger?
No, but I pulled other things.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were like,
my parents hated taking me out.
I will never do that specific thing again.
Yes.
What other things did you pull on them?
Well, I would randomly, like, be in public and start, like, play like fart noises on my phone and be like, ew, mom, that's so gross. Dad, that's disgusting. You can't be doing that things. You can't be doing that in public. And I'd be blasting and people would be looking over at us. Or I'd just be screaming. Like when I thought I was funny when I was younger. I was like, I would be walking around the grocery store or something. I'm like, Dad, you need any more adult diapers? Do you need anything? And like, they hated taking me out places. So I would always start a scene. And
wow.
I would run away and hide and I would start stealing things.
Wow.
Because they wouldn't buy it for me. So I'd just take it and walk, and then they would have to go. The things would go off. So they would have to go back and buy it for me.
Oh my goodness.
That was.
Have you gotten this out of your system now?
Yeah. I think, yeah.
Yeah. Are you just an angel now?
Of course. I've always been.
Always. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like that anymore. I grew up. Ish.
All right. Riley, thank you so very much for that.
Of course.
Riley Kaplan. She shared that story with me in my classroom at Michigan State University on April 23rd, 2026. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, the My Parents episode. Today's episode was produced and edited by myself, Rob Prince. Our associate producer is Mary Beth Lee. My Michigan Story is presented by WKR in East Lansing, Michigan. Remember, I can't make My Michigan Story without your Michigan Story. So get me your story today at mymichiganstory.com. That's MIMichiganStory.com. And thanks.